So my time hasn't started yet, it's still loading. So my background is government. I don't know if that makes me more reformed or less than Tony. So my talk today is about air quality monitoring strategies for assessing emissions from oil and gas development. It's quite a mouthful right off the bat, so I can't cover everything, so my focus today is going to be more upon natural gas. So we'll see that as we move through. So my previous work has mainly been for government agencies, regulation, Clean Air Act style monitoring, again with a ultimate outcome of protecting public health through having clean air. So I'm not solely responsible. So I want to thank my colleagues Jeff Soltis and Derek Montague, who are my co-collaborators on this endeavour. So this endeavour is now into its fourth year in Wyoming, looking at Sublette County. We'll come to that as we move through the presentation. So we're into our fourth year of our project. So I do have a disclosure. My work that I'll be presenting today is funded through a regulator managed mitigation fund, which is paid for by the developers through, in this case, a supplemental environmental impact statement. So there's my disclosure. So perhaps obvious, but we've got to remind ourselves what natural gas is. Natural gas is a combination of methane and VOC. Predominantly, the VOC component that we will find will be C2 to C10 compounds. There will be alkanes and aromatics, and that's really important because it can enable us to very easily fingerprint the natural gas that comes from a particular field. Different fields will be different. The field I'll be talking about today mainly is from a tight sandstone in Sublette County, and that field, for example, has a very high concentration or composition is biased towards non-methane hydrocarbons. That's another term that we can actually interchange in this case. About 8%. Now, that percentage it's important for us to know how much of the gas that's coming out is going to be VOC related, because within the VOC fraction, we're going to have compounds, there's a shopping list that you're going to see later, ethane, propane, butane, pentanes. We might not be so concerned about those, but we will certainly be more concerned when we hear names like n-hexane, benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, and the xylene isomers, and even some very trace amounts of trimethyl benzene. So that's important for us to know about. And this balance, why do we worry about the balance? Well, I'm not talking about engine emissions here today, because we can only cover so much, but why are we concerned? Well, our concerns, as mentioned earlier, are quite wide-ranging, from human health all the way through to climate change, and as already been pointed out, climate change is perhaps a very significant public health issue that we're going to all face together, or certainly our children will be. And for air toxics, as already mentioned, the easy target, or the compound that's been given most concern over the years, benzene. And since I'm obviously not from America, a lot of my foundational experience is in Europe, and there is, for example, a Clean Air Act equivalent for benzene in ambient air. We don't have a similar standard for ambient air in America. Now, ozone issues. Interesting. When we think about ozone, VOCs are going to be a contributing factor, along with other VOCs from other emission sources, motor vehicles, power stations, etc., etc. But the interesting part I'm going to hopefully share with you today is this new wintertime ozone. So we will have a contribution from the natural gas industry to both summer and winter ozone, and the issue is going to be density and relative location when you try and tease out responsibility. And obviously greenhouse gas, I'm not going to go into that too much today. So oil and gas operations, I want to give this bigger overview, and the first thing to remember, it is an absolutely huge infrastructure. It connects the drilling process in faraway places from the drilling, you've still got to have processing, you've then got to have pipeline, the network, you have to then have the distribution, there's got to be compression. There's another issue. Depending upon the pressure that the gas comes out, how much compression will you need in a given location? So we can see the three main steps, but the one point we want to make, we want the system to be closed. Why do we want it to be closed? Well, if it's not, then we're going to have pollution leaks. And in this industry, a pollution leak is also wasted revenue. So, you know, it serves both ways. So, this is from the EPA. I put this up just so we can get some context for those three main phases. So, we've got, again, production, transmission and storage, and then distribution. We can see that according to EPA, we've got about 60% related to production. So when we want to be thinking about control, we always look for the biggest targets first. When we cleared up urban cities, we looked at the power stations. So if we again take the same analogy here, then certainly the easiest, most obvious target is production. So production would include, again, terminology, sorry, but completion. And what's completion? Well, that's the process that Tony talked about earlier, where we have to go in, we have to do directional drilling, and then our hydraulic fracturing before we have some other processes to allow us to then bring this well into production. So EPA, I think, estimates that if we consider completions, and if I'm going to come to this as we move forward, and we do a style of completion called a green completion, then we might be able to dramatically reduce that 64% value, reducing emissions from this sector. But we'll come to that as we move forward, so I can explain a little bit more what green completion is. Okay, well, here's a picture of one. I gave a separate presentation that focused on just on air quality and hydraulic fracturing at the University of Wyoming recently. That's available online. I'm not going to go into all the details. But in Wyoming, because of the driving force, which is the Clean Air Act, and that's very important for our consideration, certainly in Wyoming and anywhere else, because of the ozone issues, there was a voluntary program with the industry in the area to do green completions. So what's a green completion? We saw what happens when a well that's going from into production, Tony showed us the picture earlier of the venting, huge clouds of release. The alternative to that is a green completion. A green completion, if we look, if we can get this to work, we can see there's the well, main well there, and rather than it just being vented off so it would all be flowing off with these clouds, it's moved off into a four-phase separator, which separates out the sand that would clog up production equipment, separates out the liquids and the gas. The gas will then go directly to production to be processed. But that it kind of still looks dirty, and to some extent, when you're there, it is a mechanical dirty process. But in this case, the estimate is that we are. This is a Halliburton. You can see the good red, obvious red Halliburton trucks here. The way they do a hydraulic frack in this field in Sublette County, if they didn't do a green completion, they would have 3 million cubic feet of gas per day for 3 days at least would be directly released. So they, by doing this process, it reduces the release, doesn't eliminate it totally. But if you look at the other presentation, you'll see there that there's still handling condensate can be an issue. So, when you have a problem, the ozone problem, and I'll show you some figures of that shortly, what you have to do is try and come up with a game plan of how you're going to deal with that problem. So, ozone in the winter was discovered actually by, and this is the most fantastic part of the whole story, in 2005 by a middle school science student under the leadership of Elaine Crumpley. If you search her, you'll see that she's still active, active activist regarding ozone. She just put simple indicators into the environment and they changed colour. But it was impossible for there to be ozone in the winter. And so she repeated her experiment like a good scientist, and it was shown there was still the same result. Her results were refuted by the powers that be, and eventually she was taken seriously, and the Wyoming DEQ put a monitor, and they found wintertime ozone. And the rest has now become history, or is it ongoing, let's say, issue to assess. So what they've got here is an emission inventory, and if you can just about see, the colours are hard to see on this projector, but down here is completions. If we have EPA estimating somewhere around 25% for completions, we can see it's a tiny sliver here. That's because their estimate is that these completion emissions are dramatically reduced. So then we have a different target. These would be the same emission routes in the Marcellus. And again, we have to think about the distribution of these points. So, tanks. For example, in Sublette County, the reason this has gone down is because they have a liquids gathering system. Reduces all those tanks that you'd see on each well pad, it eliminates them because it goes into a separate, just like the gas will go into a pipeline, we have another pipeline for the liquids, whether they be water or the condensate, the heavier molecular weight emissions. We also have large emissions from dehydration. It's an integral part of the process. Especially if when you're on a gas field that doesn't have any electrical supply, you will also have to deal with pneumatic pumps, which are driven by the gas itself, so there will be leaks there. So there is an inevitable amount of emission associated with oil and gas development. There's no getting away from that, but you then have to think about distribution. So this is a good tool, an emission inventory, because it allows you to then make policy decisions. That's what they're designed for. Got to say, this is not reality, okay? Don't confuse an emission inventory with reality. It's a tool. So, location, location, location. I've got it easy because I'm working in an area that's almost totally dominated by oil and gas. It's not in a combined with population density. So, When we have increased in development, we get increased awareness. We've seen that. With proximity comes visibility. And we have seen important air quality concerns emerge, in particular when it's close to where people live. That's an important driver. And we've seen this public debate, public discourse, academic and regulatory, but also in the media as well. So when we see a debate like that, it's our responsibility to enter in and provide the best information that we can. Apologies for this one. The reason I put this slide up is a reminder. I'm tempted to do lots of monitoring. If you don't pay respect to all the three parts that make up a good air quality assessment, you can very easily get lost. The emission inventory isn't real, it's a tool. A model is dependent upon the emission inventory and should be validated by good monitoring. So you have to have these all combined in a systematic approach. If you just do monitoring, you're not really assessing the problem. You're just monitoring. You just pay to put someone to put some monitors somewhere. So you have to put them to a meaningful purpose. So if you get lost in one of those corners or you don't connect the corners, you'll be lost and you'll not get resolution to the problem. Problem resolution is in the centre. So, before you can have a solution, what is the problem? So, that's a question that I'm going to pose to myself for my research in Wyoming. The question was pretty clear in Sublette County. We'll come to the Marcellus shortly. So, just in case you don't know where Wyoming is, right? So, way over there, okay? We provide all of your energy. Coal, natural gas, uranium, you name it, we export it. If you look at the statistics, it's quite amazing how significant Wyoming is. So we're getting a little bit closer. You may have gone to Yellowstone in the upper left-hand corner, and now that's where our project is based. So we've got an air quality issue, an ozone wintertime problem on the edge of the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. Let's get in a little bit closer. We can see to the Wind River range up here, and then the Wyoming range here. Pinedale is up in here, and then you drive through this way to get to Jackson, just in case you've ever been there. So we've seen Frack Tracker earlier. Here's another dotted map with development. So these are very significant developments, very dense developments. This is the Pinedale Anticline, and this is the Jonah Field. Each has 22 trillion, over 20 trillion cubic feet of natural gas in reserve. So these are significant. Add them together, and it's probably would be one of the biggest fields. In fact, I think Pinedale is now maybe ranked 4 in the nation, and Jonah is not far behind. So they are significant developments. And we got ozone, as I mentioned earlier. So what was the response to this? It had to be a regulatory response. But first, the scope of the problem needs to be defined. So job one, what's the problem? We have an ozone problem. It's a Clean Air Act problem. Then we have to determine the contributing sources. I just showed you all the wells, yeah. The arguments were it's stratospheric ozone. That was the first one that had to be debunked. Second one was it's coming from Salt Lake City. No, it's not, because it's stagnant air conditions. The movement was impossible, and especially given the production of ozone. Then my personal favourite, potato farming from Idaho. Not all those wells that are right on the doorstep. So we go through the process of proving is not the right term, but determining the relative contributions. So we determined that we really do think it's oil and gas. So what are the information gaps? And the information gaps were, in this case, to start with, a lack of monitoring. So we come up with, the state government came up with their assessment design for resolving the problem. They want this problem to go away. Wyoming is sensible enough to have severance tax. So there's a vested interest in the royalties, but there's also a responsibility to respect the Clean Air Act. So, therefore, the problem is taken very, very seriously. What have they done? They've done a lot. They've had voluntary measures, a whole shopping list, which I'm not going to go into. But even the best plan you could put together in this case has not led to success. This is last year. This is just, earlier this year. So here we see ozone levels exceeding those in the summer in Los Angeles, where peak. This is my site, and some of the government sites are even higher, peaking hourly averages up to around the 120 level, with 8-hour averages over 100. So it's not over yet. There still needs to be a better understanding of how to control this, whether through NOx or VOC control. But I won't go into that in too much detail now. So can the lessons that we've learned in Wyoming be applied elsewhere? Well, yes and no. The difference is that my area, it's been simple because it's just oil and gas. When you get into areas that have got multiple emission sources, you've got to be very, very methodical and clear with your design for determining, is that benzene from a car or is it from a gas well? So it will be a difficulty, but it is the same basic infrastructure, so you can apply understanding from elsewhere. But again, you need an assessment design. So when I think about an assessment design, I'm really glad that I'm over there in Wyoming, because what is the scale? The Marcellus Shale, we talk about that, and it's a geographical unit, but there are political units, multiple political units over that. So there's the first one. What's the scale? Because the scale will define who's in charge. And that's always important, because who's in charge may define how the issue is identified and then proceeded. So what do you do? What we did is we addressed the problem by doing temporal and spatial assessments. So that will be a recommendation. You can do continuous measurements. You can do discontinuous measurements at wide scales. Here's 2,300 measurements where we used a very complex, expensive piece of kit to measure ethane and a whole host of other hydrocarbons. On the bottom, we used a simpler piece of instrumentation to measure methane. Remember Tony talking earlier? He showed that other graph of methane. His top level is there. So these are all my hourly values. So you can see this is where all the what they're called fugitives. So they're significant. But if you know the level, then you can start to come up with control. I put this up. I'll go through it very quickly. On the left, we have the term PAPA. That's the Pando anticline. On the right, we have UW. And what I mean by this, I've got compared into PPB terms the speciation for the key hydrocarbons in natural gas from a wet gas analysis straight from the well, and then I've measured it 3 miles downwind, so I'm not on top of the development. And we can see that there's a real strong similarity in the figures. The difference is in the heavies, heavy molecular weight, and that's because of condensate handling and water treatment and potential flashing emissions. We did a survey of benzene as well. Cheap samplers, passive samplers, put 55 of them out in the environment, highly recommended for anybody doing assessments here, assuming there's a BTEX problem, and I'm not sure yet because I've not seen any gas composition. But if you put the monitors in the wrong place, and in the past people did, you get different stories. Think about that story if I didn't have the monitors where the blue is. The blue is the main core of the development area. So you can do scoping studies easily. Even better is a new piece of equipment that I've got. This is not my work, but this is a mobile methane system that's developed by a group called Picaro. So we're now going to start using that, just driving around in the vehicle, and then you can find your emissions pretty quickly. This is actually for San Francisco. So this is the other end, leaking pipes at the other end. So pipes do leak, even new. These are probably old. When we think about this, we've got the methane issue, but for me, I would say the issue I'm particularly worried about is the impact upon human health. And when I think about that, I think about exposure, whether it be to air toxics, air toxic pollutants, or to ozone. And when we talk about exposure, we've got to think about that chemical composition. We've also got to think about when we think about exposure, we've got to think about proximity to emission sources, meteorology. What's the dose-response relationship? That's important as well. We've seen a lot of news articles, anecdotal evidence of health-related impacts. So I'm interested as well to see health professionals look at chronic and acute exposure impacts of oil and gas. And with that, I'd like to pass on to the next panel member who's going to look into this in more detail. So thanks for your attention.